The NFL draft is less than a month away, and just as you thought the offseason was beginning to settle down, allow us a little bit of time to take a breath before the NFL draft, boom, a monster trade drops. Stephon Diggs has been traded to Houston Texans, along with a couple of late day three round picks. For a second round pick, I've got none other than the fantastic Heath Cummings from CBS to help walk through the immediate aftermath. Heath, I guess we'll start at the top. What's your biggest takeaway from the trade?
That we actually have to have a conversation about CJ Stroud versus Josh Allen in dynasty quarterback rankings.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, is that a hot enough take to take away from this?
That's smoking. Yeah. Okay.
I think, and we've seen Buffalo kind of try to piecemeal this wide receiver core together around Stephon Diggs as the number one, and it's worked fine. He's been the best quarterback or the second best quarterback in fantasy for the last couple of years. But I don't have a great deal of confidence that they're going to go out and replace Stephon Diggs level production in this first year. And there's every reason to wonder how Allen's skill set is going to age. And CJ Stroud just led the NFL in passing yards per game in his rookie season, and add Stephon Diggs to go along with Nico Collins and Tank Dell.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible receiver room now, isn't it, for the Texans? It's, you know, a plethora of receiving weapons, plus they've added Joe Mixon, plus Dalton Schultz is coming back. It's, you know, it's fascinating what they're doing in terms of loading up around that rookie quarterback. So I've been talking all day saying, to me, this doesn't affect Josh Allen at all in Dynasty. You know, Stephon Diggs is a 30-year-old receiver. I think if we're looking at this from Dynasty, you probably should have been baking in the fact that Stephon Diggs was maybe going to be going or definitely seeing a production drop over the next 2 years. But for you, it's taken a big hit to Josh Allen's value.
No. I kind of have a formula that I use to formulate my rankings at each position when I go through and adjust them. But what I've found is that any formula you create needs to have that human touch, that when the formula spits everything out, you're like, nope, I don't actually think that. And so what I will say is the last couple of months, the thing I've had to correct is that my formula has wanted to say that CJ Stroud is QB1. Okay. Wow. So this is not a thing where I had an enormous gap between Allen and Stroud. I didn't have Stroud too. I had those top three, Mahomes and Allen and Stroud, all pretty close to each other. And so, no, it's not a huge drop for Allen. But I just don't think he had a huge edge on these guys.
Okay, that makes complete sense. I guess for me, I had Stroud in the tier with Hurts and Burrow, and he's now at the top of that tier. But I wouldn't have him in that, for me, Lamar, Mahomes, Allen tier. I think he's kind of QB4 now rather than that top three for me at the moment.
And I think that, like, the difference between the two is if you're a true contender, you should obviously prefer Allen. I'm just not sold that a team that's like, I think a rebuilding team for me should clearly prefer Stroud, because I do think there's some question about what 31, 32, 33 year old Josh Allen's going to look like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, to be honest, to me, the answer is of any of that top six, the answer is, which, if I'm rebuilding, whichever player I can get with an additional asset. You know, if right. I can go move from Stroud to any of those other top six and get a second round pick or something like that, that's the move I'm probably going to be making. What about the wide receivers? So Houston's now incredibly crowded. There now seems to be a massive vacant hole in Buffalo. Is there any big winner or big loser from those receiver cores?
I think what you hope, especially if you're a Josh Allen fantasy manager, is that there's not a big winner in Buffalo, because there are reinforcements on the way. If Curtis Samuel or Khalil Shakir are now going to see 120 targets, then I think we definitely need to worry about Josh Allen. No, I think you have to give Dalton Kincaid probably the biggest bump in Buffalo. I would downgrade Stephon Diggs more than I would downgrade Nico Collins or Tank Dell over this move. Not to say that I think that Collins and Dell are locks to be better than Diggs this year. It's just that a wide receiver that age, who is at least a little bit of a malcontent, is changing teams. And that's worked out really poorly a lot of times. If the gut team that has you is feeling like they're getting to move on, especially during that win now window, then I think that's at least a yellow flag, if not a red flag, for Diggs. And I think that Nico and Dell are moving the opposite direction he is. So if I was going biggest winner, biggest loser that are not quarterbacks, it would be Kincaid and Diggs for me.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on Diggs. I think it's John Paulson of 4-4 that always used to have the line of any time a wide receiver is moving team, unless they're seeing an upgrade in quarterback or an upgrade in volume of targets, it's a downgrade in fantasy production. And well, you know, it's probably semantics whether you can argue CJ Stroud's a better passer than Josh Allen, but let's say it's not an upgrade and it's hard to see him seeing an upgrade in targets. So it's got to be a downgrade in fantasy production because there's nowhere really for him to go but down, quite frankly.
Well, and I think there are people who were holding on to Diggs because he just kind of crossed that threshold the last 6 or 7 weeks of last season. Yeah. Who were thinking, you know, if he gets off to a good start next year, I'm still going to be able to get a first round pick for him in season. I don't really think you're ever getting a first round pick for Stephon Diggs again. I think he's, if I could get a mid second for him in the rookie draft, I'm probably doing it and just cutting my losses.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the other, I guess, sneaky winner for me in all of this is Joe Mixon. I think that if you're looking for a win now, cheap running back that you can probably go and buy for a second round pick, I think Joe Mixon's a smash now at that price because this offense is going to be absolutely phenomenal. We've seen Joe Mixon can, you know, has a nose for the end zone, has had some really good touchdown seasons. And I'm not convinced that there's a huge amount of competition in that backfield. So yes, he probably won't get much in terms of target share, but he never really did in Cincinnati. So I don't expect him to see that in Houston, but rushing production, touchdowns, I think he could be fantastic.
In a strange way, both running backs might have been winners because we saw this Bills offense when the offensive coordinator change happened went a lot more run heavy. And absolutely, I think that a lot of people kind of discounted that a little bit too much maybe. And that, like, they're trading away Diggs. I would not be surprised if Cook both sees more carries and more targets than he did last year. And so I think, yeah, I agree with you on Mixon in terms of a win now running back, but I think it might be a slight upgrade for Cook as well.
No, I think that's a great point and certainly love that. Well, if you are here, if you are watching, make sure you're hitting that subscribe button. We have got rookie profiles dropping daily and there's a mock draft every single week as we head up to the rookie draft and so much more to come. Now, we are merely 3 weeks away from the draft. Hopefully, you know the key names, but where can you expect to be drafting them in your rookie drafts? I'm joined by the fantastic Heath Cummings from CBS as we are going to walk through a rookie mock draft, super flex, and explain where we would be drafting players through the process. So, Heath, first of all, you've been incredibly gracious. I think the first person I've had on this offseason that has allowed me to pick the 101. But I'm keen to pick your brains a little bit before we get to that. So for you, is it a clear-cut 101? Is there any sort of consideration of anyone else here?
No, it is definitely a clear-cut 101 for me with Caleb at 101 and Superflex. I don't think there's really any other choice. The thing that's really interesting to me, and this kind of came into more view for me yesterday, I had Matt Waldman on FFT Dynasty for our wide receiver preview. And his order of even the top three wide receivers was not the same as the consensus or mine. And I really kind of started to crystallize that, like, after Caleb Williams, I think I could make an argument for like three different players for each of the next five picks. Like, I think I can legitimately make an argument for two quarterbacks at pick two and three wide receivers at pick two, maybe only two, but like it's not a clear set. And what I think will probably happen is after the NFL draft, we're going to have a consensus that comes together and then you're going to feel silly for going too far against that, like we always do. But as of right now, I do love that kind of opportunity of what there is between picks 2 through 5 or 2 through 6, depending on how you feel about Rome Odunze. But if I'm taking the second pick right now, I'm going to be optimistic. And my optimistic take is that Jaden Daniels lands in a good spot with a creative offensive mind, much like where we were at with Anthony Richardson at this time last year. And honestly, when we came out of that draft, I couldn't have been more excited about what had happened for Anthony Richardson in the NFL draft. And I hope that I feel the same about Jaden Daniels. So I'm going to go with him at the 102.
Yeah, I've struggled with Jaden Daniels all off season. I can absolutely see the ceiling. I can absolutely see the potential. And I talked about last week with John Bauer, where, you know, people talk about rushing production as the ceiling, but actually for fantasy, rushing production is the floor because it's bankable, it's reliable. And it's for someone like Jaden Daniels, that's your kind of week to week consistency. And the passing is what's going to be the up and down. I have two concerns. I think the size, you talked about Anthony Richardson. The difference is Anthony Richardson is built like a tank.
But he's huge, but he can't stay healthy. So well, this weird. Is it.
And he's huge and can't stay healthy. Jaden Daniels is tiny. You know, he's tall, but he is skinny.
Right.
And I mean, if you've not seen the video that Tom put out on our channel of Jaden Daniels refusing to avoid contact and getting absolutely drilled all over the field, it's well worth a good minute because it's great fun. But he plays like he's Josh Allen or Anthony Richardson, but he's barely 200 pounds. And then I've also got the concern around, I don't know how much he can process from the pocket. I know the arm talent's there. I know he can make every throw, but I don't know how often he can sit in a pocket and go 1-2-3 rather than kind of 1-2 tuck it and run kind of thing. So those are my two concerns and probably why I'd be reticent to take him here at 102.
It's funny because when I was watching Anthony Richardson at the start of last year, and I don't watch as much college football as I would like to just because during that season I'm so busy, but I was so impressed with the way that Richardson was, like, he was getting through his progressions, and the guy doesn't take sacks. And I don't think Jaden Daniels is that at all. But if you have a coach, I think that knows that and that can design something around that 1-2 and go. The 1-2 and go is about as good as it gets for fantasy football, as long as the 1 and 2 are good, because there is so much more rushing opportunity on the scrambles.
Yeah, absolutely. So are you hoping, when you say a coach, are you hoping that it's Washington with Cliff, or are you expecting him to potentially go somewhere else?
I think Washington with Cliff would be very good. I don't think he's the only option, but mostly it's just not New England. My quarterback hope for almost everyone is not New England. I'd like Drake May, I think, better in Minnesota than I would Jaden Daniels. But that's not I wouldn't be surprised. Like, and I know that it's probably unlikely, but if the Raiders could get up to that, I'd feel like the Raiders, knowing him like they do, would design something around that 1-2 and go and be okay with it. Cause I think they want to run it 550, 600 times this year anyway.
Yeah, they've got an offensive play caller that spent last year with Justin Fields and in Luke Getsy and could potentially, you know, you'd like to think would have several QB designed runs already ready to go.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to continue the QB run here. I don't think we've seen a draft where Marvin Harrison has fallen outside the top three, but I'm going to stick to my board. I'm going to take Drake May. I think that, you know, there's been a hell of a lot of conjecture and hate, quite frankly, on him over the past probably 3 months. But I still think he's a supreme talent. I think he's got prototypical size, arm strength. I've got very few concerns. And I think, look, let's be honest, there's a chance that any quarterback taken in the first round will bust. Yes. I think it's probably a greater than 50% chance that any NFL quarterback taking the first round will bust. If I'm going to take a shot on a quarterback in a rookie draft, I'm going to bet on a guy like Drake May, who has prototypical size, prototypical arm talent, has shown the ability to work all three levels from the pocket, read a defense, process correctly, and deliver the ball on time and accurately. And if he misses, okay, I can live with that, rather than shoot for the upside and the potential ceiling elsewhere. I think I'd rather take a safe pick of someone like a Drake May.
Yeah, and I think if this wasn't my imaginary world where Drake May just got picked by the Patriots, then that's exactly what I would do. I don't think I know who's going to be my 102 or 103 at this point. And I think it's really important for people, like most dynasty managers, probably don't establish like a concrete ranking before the draft and have to publish it and have everyone assign their name to that. But for those of us who do, I think it's really important to hold that type of attitude, that this is really, really fluid until we get through the draft and see where everybody is and what the NFL actually thought of these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? Because you get held to, oh, but you had this guy. Well, I have a very clear and defined process of I have my kind of rookie model is 40% of my ranking at running back, wide receiver, tight end. I have my film grade is 10%, and then 50% is draft capital. And it's like I'm ranking guys based on where I think they're going to go. But if draft capital changes massively, that's still 50% of my ranking. Like it could have huge impacts on my rankings post-draft compared to pre-draft. So it is quite challenging to, as you said, to kind of nail your colors to the mast and stick those rankings out pre-draft because so much changes.
And I'm really, with all the news about Arizona trading out, like I kind of assumed that I was going to have Marvin Harrison as the clear wide receiver one, even post-draft, because I just assumed he was going to be the first wide receiver drafted and he was going to go to Arizona with Kyler Murray and he was going to see 10 targets a game. And like, it was just going, I'm going to take Marvin Harrison here now. I'm just less certain that's going to be the case, especially after like talking to Matt Waldman, and he talked about not only does he not have Harrison as his top wide receiver, but he thinks there's a lot of NFL people who don't have Harrison as their top wide receiver. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Malik Nabers is the right answer here, but for right now, I'm expecting Harrison in Arizona as the first wide receiver. I think he has the best floor of these guys. He is the guy for me who is almost certain to be a number one wide receiver on his team and a top 20 guy in fantasy for quite a while. Now, I'm not sure he has quite as much upside as Nabers.
No, I agree with you 100%. For me, they're 1A, 1B, and it could be, you know, a coin flip as to which one I'd take. I think it's really interesting. We keep hearing about how deep this wide receiver class is. You know, Daniel Jeremiah's got, I think it's 20 in his top 50, or like it's obscene how deep this wide receiver class is. Yet we keep hearing that there's going to be three drafted in the top 10. Well, if you're an NFL general manager and you're sort of thinking, right, there's only five tackles that are good,
right,
and they're all going to go in the first round, but there's potentially 20 wide receivers, would you not go and get your tackle in the first round and come back and get a wide receiver in the second?
I think it's possible, and what if this is just the wide receiver class we're talking about for the next 10 years, and there are three that are suddenly right there with Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase and CeeDee Lamb in the wide receiver rankings, and there's 20 wide receivers that are starters? I'd still rather get one of those Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase types.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. But I just wonder, what I'm saying is, I wonder if we do, you know, there's been the consensus that three wide receivers are going to go in the top 10.
Right.
And that's been the way for the past 3 months. I wonder if as we get to the draft, some of these general managers start looking around and going, actually, maybe I go and grab someone else here because there's a competent receiver in the second round. And I do wonder if that could be, you know, if Arizona trades back, if the Chargers trade back, could that allow some of these wide receivers to fall, and we see something like last year where there was no wide receiver drafted in the top, I think it was 19 picks, and then there was four pretty much back to back, wasn't there? So I think it's going to be fascinating to see certainly how it does play out. For me here, 105, we talked about it, I've got Harrison and Nabers 1A, 1B, so I'm very happy to take Nabers here. 1B, I think the ceiling is phenomenal. I think his movement ability as a route runner, but also with the ball in his hands, is absolutely incredible. So very, very excited there. You're now back on with the 106. Do you feel like that top five, there's a bit of a teardrop now?
It's funny because I kind of do, but I also feel like this might be the easiest pick for me yet in the draft because I'm taking Rome Odunze. And so is it possible that there's a teardrop after those top five and also a teardrop after pick six? Because there's not really, for me, like, I guess it's possible that JJ McCarthy goes top four and to a good landing spot. And so somehow he sneaks into that spot, but there's not anybody else I'm really considering over Odunze at this spot.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's this top six with the potential for JJ McCarthy to get in there, maybe ahead of Odunze. You know, if he goes four to Minnesota, for example,
right,
then that would be incredibly appealing given the weapons and the offensive line and the play caller. That is who I'm going to take here at the 107, and just cross fingers and pray that it is a good landing spot, it is good draft capital, because, you know, I feel like we've had the Malik Willis could go top five falls Will Levis could go top. I think it was two. He was mocked to at one point.
He was like plus 200 or something to go number two at one point last year. Yeah,
it's obscene. Yeah. So hopefully JJ McCarthy is actually going to go, you know, in the top 10 and not be the 3.0 version of those two. But yeah, I think that I've got concerns about JJ McCarthy given the offense, given the fact that I feel like he's the one that we're projecting most. Yes, there are definite NFL traits. Yes, there is definite potential, but there's an awful lot of projection in his profile compared to some of the other guys.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And he's going to be the guy who, and I guess Jaden Daniels is too, because we don't know for sure where he's going. It feels like May and Caleb Williams going one and May's going top three. It's the other two. Does one of them fall outside of the top 10 and then they're not getting picked here? And probably the guy who is getting picked here is Brock Bowers, who I will take at pick eight, even though I'm a little bit anti tight end in both round one of the NFL draft and round one of rookie drafts, but I've seen him going 106, 107. So if I can get 108, that's where I feel like he belongs.
Yeah, there's a bit of a drop off, definitely in terms of talent here. And look, I'm a guy that I think we need to reevaluate the tight end position as a whole in Dynasty. I think we've been spoiled by the elite production of a guy like Travis Kelce, who was giving you 7-8 points per game over kind of a replacement level player, and suddenly Dalton Kincaid and Trey McBride and Sam Laporta give you like 3-4 points per game over replacement level, and they're being held up as the same value that Travis Kelce was holding. And it's like, I think, yes, they're clearly good tight ends and they're better than a replacement level guy, but I don't think they're as elite as we expect. And so for me, taking Brock Bowers in a top 6-7 pick, he's basically got to walk in and be Dynasty tight end one. And I'm not sure I'm ready to spend that kind of capital to go and acquire him. So it does feel like it's almost, yeah, you've kind of got to pick him here, but I'd much rather be trading back and gaining some additional assets along the way. You're on mute, Heath.
Yeah, I agree with you. If I can move back 3 to 4 spots, that would be ideal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I'm gonna jump in here at the 109 and take a guy that I feel like I'm going to end up with a huge amount of in rookie draft, Xavier Worthy. Fantastic profile, fantastic talent. I think he could sneak into the first round off the back of that 40 time. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit devastated because I was a huge Xavier Worthy believer, and then he went and ran that 40 and suddenly everybody else has jumped to the bandwagon. So I feel like my hype has been cooled a little bit, but yeah, at this point, I'm very happy to take him with a 109.
Yeah, and I think at one, like, that would have been my pick. This is the first you sniped me. I thought he might fall, but that would have been my pick at 110. And this is the point where, like, realistically, my answer is, what wide receiver are the Bills drafting in round one, or who's the first running back drafted? But we don't know either of those things. And so I will take Brian Thomas, another wide receiver who I think was a bit of a question mark entering the combine as to whether he's a first round wide receiver. But with that size and that speed and that profile, I don't know how he doesn't go in round one. And so that's worth 110 with the information we don't have.
Yeah. And you mentioned there running back one. I know when I was on your show, we talked about inserting a running back in this kind of top 9, top 10. Are you expecting, I guess we're looking at Los Angeles Chargers, Cowboys, maybe the Ravens, if one of those teams takes a running back day 2, hopefully round 2, will you expect them to be going in the top 9, 10?
I would say yes. If Worthy goes round 1, or really whoever goes to the Bills is probably going to be that pick 9. And then pick 10, I would expect, is going to be RB1. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's two of them between pick 10 and pick 12.
Yeah. I think I'm probably going to be more running back sort of around 11, 12, just because I'm a little bit lower, I think, than consensus on this class and the sort of potential. But yeah, it's going to be hard to pass up, isn't it? If one of those Chargers who are, let's be honest, they're going to want to run the ball a lot, if they draft a running back early day 2, or the Ravens, and we've seen what running backs can do in that offense, I think it could be very appealing. I'm going to stick with the wide receiver trend, though. I'm going to go and grab Troy Franklin. feels like he's been falling over the last kind of probably 6 weeks since the combine. But I'm really excited. I think if he can slot in the NFL as a 1B in an offense, I think his potential fantasy could be absolutely phenomenal. Are you a Franklin guy?
Yes, and I have let the combine influence me a little bit because, like, I thought he and Worthy and Thomas were all pretty close, and I had him actually at the top of the group before the combine. And it's not so much that I'm worried that that means he's not going to be good as I'm worried that that means that he's not going to be a round one pick and these guys, other guys are.
That makes complete sense.
So if he's a middle of round two and these guys are going late in round one, then he probably needs to be behind them. But I did like him a lot before that process. It's just, I don't think that NFL teams are going to ignore it. So I don't think we should completely ignore it.
And is that more the athletic testing, the weight that concerned you, or was it just running the gauntlet?
Yes. Like, that's the thing. Like, what was the good news that came for Troy Franklin during the combine? I think you can guy has a good combine and runs a slow 40. Who cares? Guy has a great combine and weighs 165 pounds. Who cares? The guy is like just taking hit after hit after hit, it seemed like. And so, yeah, it was the combination. I you can tell I'm a little bit sheepish about the idea of letting the combine affect me, but it's not irrelevant.
Yeah. It's hard to watch that and not take something away from it, because it, certainly for me, it made me go back and look at the film and say, okay, I had this guy as an above average route runner. If he can't run the gauntlet, what's going on here? Is this, you know, am I seeing something different here? So right. Yeah, it certainly made me go back and reevaluate as such. Go on.
No, I was going to say, and then I think at 112, I have to keep the, there's a drinking game on the, on my show about, I have to, every podcast I do, I have to mention Blake Corum to the Chargers. So let's just assume Blake Corum went to the Chargers in round two. And I don't think Blake Corum's the best running back in this class, but I do think it's highly likely that he's going to get drafted into a good situation.
Yeah.
Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, I guess with Blake Corum, I sort of describe him as a jack of all trades, a coach's best friend, a guy that's just going to be solid, reliable, but it's hard to get excited about him. And I think...
Is he David Montgomery?
Yeah, but maybe David Montgomery's a little bit more exciting in the receiving game.
Well, and it also depends on what Blake Corum are you looking at? Because Blake Corum early in college looks like a super... It seems like the injuries really hampered him later in his college career. And I generally am of the mind that at that young of an age, that's not something that's long lasting. But there are guys like Juju Smith-Schuster who have a couple of injuries and all of a sudden they're just not the same guy anymore. So I think that's a little bit of speculation.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, it just feels like, I guess, at the running back position, perhaps I'm more interested in chasing that upside than I feel like Blake Corum's going to be a solid double. And I feel like there's probably the lowest bust potential of any of the running backs in this class, but I just don't know quite what that kind of upper end ceiling is. But with the first pick in the second round, I'm going to go back to the quarterback. Well,
yeah,
I think Michael Penix has got the potential to go in the first round. I think, yes, he doesn't create a structure. Yes, he doesn't have that kind of rushing potential. But as a pocket passer, as a processor, I think he's up there as one of the top in this draft class. And I think that he could, you know, go in and be a NFL-ready fantasy producer very early in his career. So to get him in the second round, I'm expecting him to get late first round, if not early second round draft capital. So I'm happy with that sort of value here.
And I think that's the distinction. If it's late first round draft capital, then he's definitely a first round rookie pick. And if it's the second round draft capital, then it's kind of borderline whether he is. But I just don't understand, because you mentioned it, like, not that big of a threat with his legs. How can you be that fast and not be a big threat with your legs?
I think it's a willingness to rush. I think we've seen, if you think of like Dak after his I can't remember his ankle or leg break. Yeah. He didn't rush for 2 years, basically. And obviously, Michael Penix has had 4 season-ending injuries, multiple ACLs. Like, I wonder if he's got the athleticism to rush, mm-hmm. but he's not wanting to get out the pocket and welcome on those hits, and he'd rather be a pocket passer. You know, if he gets to the league, as you said, the athleticism's there.
Right.
If he gets to the league and decides that he's going to start tucking it and running, it opens up, you know, hopefully a higher fantasy ceiling and potentially some rushing production. But I think that he can operate from the pocket as a, you know, I feel like I always say Tua for every pocket passer, but as a Tua level prospect.
You know, that's absolutely fine. I'll be the mark here. I will stick with the running backs, and I'll take the guy who I do think is the most talented running back in this draft, Jonathan Brooks. He just hasn't, I don't know how much we can expect from him in year one. And I think the draft capital might suffer a little bit because of that. But if he's the Dallas Cowboys selection in round two, then he's a round one draft pick. But we'll just have to see where he goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've perfectly sniped me there, because, yeah, I really like Jonathan Brooks. He's my RB1. I think that was he healthy, I think he'd be in the conversation of that top eight.
Yeah.
For me, even if he redshirts a year, I'm happy taking him at this point in the draft. I think he's got the most all-round profile. I think as a pure one-cut runner, he's one of the best I've seen in the last few years. So yeah, I'm very excited about.
Well, and I think we talked about this when we talked before, but like if you're a contending team at the end of round one, and you're not in love with those wide receiver options, trying to trade back a couple spots with a team that earned 201 or 202 or 203, and they can have the wide receiver and you can have Jonathan Brooks, and it works out pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that move. I'm going to stick with the running back position. I'm going to go with my running back two, which is Trey Benson.
Yep.
I think if we're removing Jonathan Brooks, I think Trey Benson's probably the other back that I think could be a three-down workhorse in the league. I'm expecting the league to like him, given the athleticism and, you know, the combine testing, and think he could be a sneaky hit for redraft this year if he does get, you know, round two draft capital. We see running backs hit for redraft time and time again. So, yeah, even if he doesn't have that longevity, hits year one, potentially sell him off and hopefully make a profit.
I will move back to the wide receiver position happily. And this is a guy who actually went up for me because of the combine, but Ladd McConkey. I think that people see him and think that this is maybe, you know, they have certain ideas because of prototypical slot white receiver, but his athleticism at the combine really impressed me. And so I would expect he's going to get that early day two draft capital and get a chance to produce in year one. And I get a little scared of him at the end of round one, but at this spot, I feel really good about it.
Yeah, I just want to see. I wanted to see more production. It feels like he never really produced phenomenal numbers, and he had some decent per snap numbers, you know, targets per run and yards per run numbers, but he never really put it all together. And it's like, yeah, okay, Georgia had plenty of other options, and obviously Brock Bowers was a huge part of their offense, but I guess for me to want to be excited about him, I just wanted to see a little bit more. But I think, as you said, 204, it's really good value and a nice little pick here. I'm going to stick with the wide receiver position. I'm going to draft a guy that I don't think I've drafted at all yet this offseason. I'm not a big fan of his, but at this point, I feel like I've got a bet on the athleticism, the fact that I think he could be a round one pick in the NFL draft. Keon Coleman. I don't know if he's going to put it all together, but I'm happy to take a punt on pure upside at the 205.
Yeah, I also am not a big fan of him, but I get kind of like what we said about McConkey. Like if he's in the middle of round two, then the upside is worth the obvious risk. I'll go back to the quarterback position. I don't have a lot of faith in the Broncos or in Sean Payton, but I am getting the sneaking suspicion that they're going to be starting Bo Nix next year. And so, I'll take Bo Nix at the 106 and hopefully, or 206, and hopefully Sean Payton can gimmick his way to 4,000 passing yards.
It would be absolutely wild if they get rid of Russell Wilson for Bo Nix. I just don't see it at all with Bo Nix, but yeah,
no.
That's fine. Go and spend $80 million to get rid of a quarterback and then pay up to get a very mediocre, very low ceiling option in Bo Nix. So yeah, I don't get it, but that would probably be a Sean Payton move, let's be honest. So go on.
No, exactly. I was just agreeing.
So I'm going to stick with the running back trends. We've seen a few fly off the board recently. I'm going to go Bucky Irving. I think that the combine had me a little bit concerned. That weight adjusted 40 time wasn't where I wanted it to be. Made me go back to the tape, and I still believe in the talent. I still believe in the athleticism. I think that the on-field speed, the on-field athleticism is there. I'm not quite sure what happened in the 40, but I think he's got game-breaking potential, and I think he walks into the NFL as a kind of satellite back, third down back plus. Yeah. And he could be a phenomenal kind of lightning to, dare I say it, Gus Edwards' thunder, something like that. I think it could be a really nice 1-2 punch.
Okay, I will. I think this is the point in the draft where we should be relatively heavy on these running backs, especially the guys who are going in round two or round three, and hopefully one of them is Jalen Wright. The football guys kind of turned me on to him more, and I wish there was a little bit more in terms of total production, but I like, again, another guy who I think could be a big play home run hitter for a team right away.
Yeah, I think the flashes are there. Again, like I was saying about Ladd McConkey, I guess I just wanted to see it more. I wanted to see consistency. There are absolutely plays, but I don't know if I saw it enough, kind of down in and down out as such. I'm going to go with the tight end position. I'm going to go grab Jatavion Sanders, another guy that seems to have fallen slightly after the combine. That weight adjusted 40, again, didn't do him wonders, but I think this guy is a phenomenal kind of down the seam threat. I think he's good with the ball in his hands. I think he could be really fantastic in the NFL. So yeah, late second, let's take a punt at the tight end position.
I will. I'll swing us back to wide receiver. It's been too long since we've taken one of those. I'll take Ricky Pearsall out of Florida. Thomas Schaefer, our producer, a big fan of his. Matt Waldman, a big fan of his. I think again, another guy who has the big playability. Another guy who might be lacking a little bit in certain areas of the production profile, but I do think that he could step in and play right away.
Perfect. And then my last pick, I'm going to go back to the quarterback position. And this is perhaps going to surprise a few people, but I really think Spencer Rattler is going to go on day two. I think he has got the arm talent of probably he's top three in this class in terms of pure arm talent. And I think the NFL are going to love him. And I think that if he does go day two, getting him at the back end of the second rounds could be an absolute steal when we look back at this draft in kind of 2-3 years time.
Man, you I'm struggling with who pick 24 here is going to be. But I'm gonna take another shot on big playability and open field elusiveness. I will take Ray Davis at running back.
Perfect. So that concludes our draft. I feel like we've got to address the elephant in the room because neither of us touched him, but Adonai Mitchell. I've seen people taking him in the first round of rookie drafts. Neither of us took him in the first two. Are you just avoiding him as a player?
I wouldn't say I'm totally avoiding him as a player. And with the right build or the right need, I could absolutely see taking him where I took my last pick. I am just a little bit concerned about the profile. And like I said, when you and I talked about this before, there's a lot of really smart people that are doing models and prospect evaluation, and there's a lot of them who are pretty worried about AD Mitchell, and that concerns me quite a bit.
Yeah. I've never watched a player who has such incredible high-end flashes yet goes missing for huge chunks of games. Like his high-end is probably top three, top four in this class. But he does it like once every other game. It's ridiculous. He just doesn't seem to be able to put it together. And he's the kind of guy that, yeah, he could absolutely get into the league and be phenomenal. But I'm happy to miss on that because I don't think that a guy who struggled to put it together in college is suddenly going to switch it on and put it together in the league. So yeah, I'm happy to let others draft him. Unless probably he falls to about this point in the draft, and then
you got to take him in round three.
Yeah, exactly that. Who else is there? Anyone else that we've not drafted that you're particularly intrigued by that you think could be a later round sleeper?
I wouldn't be surprised if Braylon Allen gets better landing spot than what we're thinking, better draft capital than what we're thinking, and becomes a second round pick. at running back. At tight end, I really like Theo Johnson's athleticism. I'm hoping an NFL team falls in love with that enough to give him decent draft capital, and so we can consider him at that round two, round three range. And then Marshawn Lloyd, I think, has enough upside.
Yeah, no, I love the Theo Johnson shout. He sort of feels like he has all the tools to potentially put it together and be a good NFL.
And talent. Malachi Quarterly, I didn't, wide receiver. I didn't say him either.
Yeah, no, love that as well. And I'll throw in Tez Walker. There's some question marks there. Obviously, had a horrendous Senior Bowl, but I think the talent and the athleticism is there that he could potentially be there. But Heath, thank you ever so much for taking time to come on. It's been an absolute delight having you on. Can you remind everyone where can they find you? Where can they find your work if they don't already know?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Heath Cummings SR. You can find all my written content at cbssports.com, and you can find our podcast, Fantasy Football Today and Fantasy Football Today Dynasty, anywhere you find podcasts.
Beautiful. Go and check out their work. It is absolutely phenomenal. And if you are here, you've not hit that subscribe button, go ahead and do that now. We'll be back very soon. Continue to drop rookie profiles daily. And of course, there'll be a mock draft again next week.